Morris back to pass. Looks end zone. Has his man. Has the touchdown. Terrence Tolliver. Got a shot here. Did he make it? Yes, he did. What a catch. Oh, my. Luke Tasker touchdown.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
So this is an episode unlike any other. And for something this monumental, I figure we can start by talking about how we are changing where we are going to host our podcast. It will still be on 3 Down Nation, of course. It will always be there. However, Mike and I have decided to migrate our show from the site we used to use to the Podbean hosting site, which in looking at it, I think is more accessible to people out there. I kept getting asked whether we would ever get the show on a non-iTunes hosting thing. There's actually a Podbean app for your cell phone, your mobile devices, your iPads, your whatever. And you can download, if you don't use iTunes, you can download that app, and the podcast will be right there. You can listen to it there. I'm not getting paid by them to shill this. It's just, you know, I thought people should know that we're moving to something new, and with new stuff comes a new logo. So when you see this show show up in your feed or wherever, you're going to have a nice, crisp, new logo. I think it'll be fun. So I just wanted everyone to know that, and I guess now we can get into the news of the week, the big one being they finally released the CFL schedule. The Ticats schedule, I wrote a piece for 3 Down Nation, poured over it. Is there anything out there in the schedule that, Ticats-wise or otherwise, Mike, that you are looking forward to this year?
Well, I was a big advocate of the first week, getting Hamilton versus Toronto at BMO Field. I just thought, who else could be the first Argos opponent at BMO Field than the Ticats? It just makes sense. I'm glad that they did it. It's the first game of the season, so we won't have to wait a couple days when the season kicks off to see a Ticats game, and it's just great. I'm sure it'll be a great atmosphere at BMO. I'm sure you're going to try to get tickets to it, and I just think it'll be a sellout stadium and a great thing to watch on TV for me, so I'm pumped about that. And I like, they usually do a Grey Cup rematch. I'm going to try to get to that game. I believe it's on the Saturday, Edmonton-Ottawa in Edmonton. So I'm looking forward to both those games. And I just pumped that, we're getting closer to the season and the schedule's out now. So I can plan my, take my days off for the Edmonton Ticats game, which I believe is July 23rd. And then I'm planning on getting down to Calgary for the Ticats Calgary game, which is in late August. So those are some of the games that I'm looking forward to this season.
The Calgary game is one of the last, it's the second to last game that the Ticats play outside of Ontario, and it's in August. So the schedule to me was a bit of a mixed bag. I completely agree. Argos Ticats in BMO, and it's opening the season. Like, this is the first game of the year. Was a complete no-brainer. We've been talking about this, I think, every time we talked about what the schedule could look like. And if I'm not mistaken, weren't the Ticats the first opponent in the Sky Dome as well?
Whew, I'm not sure about that, but
I think they were. I think they beat them too.
Okay, so hopefully it's the same outcome.
Hopefully. Now, there's some good and some bad. You know, the good being they play four of their last five, I think, at home. But there's that four-game road trip at the start of the season where they go to Montreal, Edmonton, then they got a bye, then they go to Winnipeg, and then BC. It's, I figured with no Guelph, no stadium delays, no Pan Am games, we'd see a bit more of an even schedule. But these road games at the start of the season kind of have me concerned simply because in my gut, I feel like Zach Kolaros is going to miss probably the first 6 weeks of the season to recover from that knee injury. Let's get him back healthy. You know, you want him back healthy for the end of the year. At Montreal, at Edmonton, at Winnipeg, at BC, that's not an easy road to go through.
No, I would love to see them have at least one home game in that 4 week stretch, but I guess it wasn't in the cards. You're right. Those are, I think Toronto's going to be improved this year. I think Montreal's going to be improved. Edmonton might not be the same team I think Winnipeg's going to be improved. But, yeah, those are going to be four tough games for the Ticats, especially if they don't have Zach Collaros. But maybe Mazzoli starts off the season on a hot streak and we can get 2-3 wins out of that. That would be a great start to the season. And then we can get back to home and start reeling off wins at home like the Ticats have been doing for the last couple of years.
Well, that's just it. I look at the schedule and I think if the Ticats can be 3-6, 4-5, say, by Labor Day, and then you got Zach back and fully healthy sometime in there with all those home games. Like, it's Toronto. It's Labor Day's here. Then they go to Toronto. Then Montreal comes here. Then they go to Saskatchewan. Then Calgary's here. Bye week. Ottawa here. Ottawa there. Edmonton, Montreal. That's not a... Like, all those teams are good, don't get me wrong, but that's if they're going to make the schedule one way or the other, I'm kind of glad that they have all those home games at the end, because with Zach back, they, you know what I mean? They can, they, if they're around that 500 mark, they could go on a massive Edmonton-like run and just start decimating teams like they were when Collaros was healthy to start last year.
Yeah, I'd be pretty happy with a 500 record before Collaros comes back or just below it, because we all know that it's a long season in the CFL and teams can turn it around in the second half. So, you know, if they can reel off some wins in the first, you know, six games and be around 500, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Any complaints about the schedule? Anything you don't like about it?
Well, there's some stretches where, you know, for different teams where there's, you know, 3 games in 10 days, 3 games in 9 days kind of thing, which I wish we could get rid of just because of player safety. And, you know, it's just not good having that many games in that amount of time. But not too many complaints, really. I've seen people complaining about Thursday night games, but that's going to happen. You know, there's been a lot of complaints over the years about there's a MLB break and on the Wednesday when they have the All-Star break and there's no sporting events going on that Wednesday. And I believe they scheduled a game this year for that Wednesday. So the, you know, CFL will be the only sport on television that night. You know, media members have been complaining about that. Why don't they do it? Why don't they do it? Well, they finally did it. So I'm pretty happy about that. So not too many complaints on my part.
I think they finally did it. And I think people still complained.
Yeah,
probably. About why are they playing a Wednesday game? League-wide, I think the schedule, you know, some like Edmonton has a long stretch where they don't play a home game. Ottawa has a long stretch where they don't play a home game. So I think Saskatchewan's the same. There's a few teams out there that have these 3-5 week breaks between home games. So I don't think there's any sort of competitive advantage or disadvantage there. There's a couple things in the Ticats schedule I didn't really like. They come off their first bye week and have to play on a Wednesday. Mm. So they don't really get a full bye week like most teams do. But you can't really complain about that because then they play on that Wednesday and they have 10 days off before they play at BC. So to me, that break, I think that they get, you know, they have a bye week and then almost like a mini bye week essentially there too, although they'll obviously be working and all that stuff and they will not go away like they normally do during the bye. I guess that kind of balances it out. But the one thing that I just do not understand, and I know I'm going to take flack for this, is the Sunday, September 11th Labor Day Classic rematch in Toronto against the Argos. I get it. CFL needs to play games on Sunday. I do not have a problem with that. I've come to terms with that. But if there's one weekend you avoid, one weekend, it's the NFL's opening weekend. And to schedule both Southern Ontario teams, where the NFL has a massive presence, there's a lot of NFL fans in Southern Ontario that we know. I just think that that was, to me, a really, really big mistake. Do it on the Saturday. Why does it have to be on the Sunday? I don't like that move at all.
You'd like to avoid the opening weekend of the NFL. I understand that. And, you know, yeah, I agree. Why not do it on the Saturday? Why go against the NFL if you don't have to? So, yeah, I can see where you're coming from there.
But that's, you know, these are minor quibbles. You know, the schedule's out, which means the season is almost at hand. Even though we're, what is it, late February? It feels like we're almost there.
Yeah, I'm just as excited as I always am, and maybe even more. I just can't wait for this thing to get going.
So there hasn't been a ton of news regarding players signing elsewhere, but there was a rather large signing. Brian Hall has left the Hamilton Tiger Cats, which I think we all probably saw coming. But where he went is going to make him public enemy number one in Hamilton. He has signed with the Toronto Argonauts. Oh, of all the places he could have gone. Why there?
Yeah, and, you know, the Argos take away 2 defensive tackles from the Ticats, Bulky and now Hall. So, you know, I think, yeah, I'm not happy about him signing with the Argos, same with Bulky, but, you know, those are 2 pretty good pickups for the Argos on that defensive line. I think it's going to be pretty potent this year for Toronto.
Now, I'm not trying to diminish what Hall has done or his play or how good of a player he is, but we have never seen him play beside anyone other than Ted Laurent. So, and now, to be fair, we haven't really seen Laurent play beside anyone in Hamilton, at least, other than Brian Hall. I kind of wonder if maybe Hall looked as good as he did because he was playing beside a guy who was garnering so much attention. I guess we're going to find out this year when he's with the Argos.
Yeah, we'll see how they do apart from each other. I have a ton of confidence that Laurent will be fine. I think that they'll find someone to pair him with that'll do a great job. But yeah, we're going to see how Hall does without his buddy Big Teddy beside him.
Yeah, so I guess that Argo off our defensive line is going to be Hall and Balky. That's basically he's taking Hamilton's defensive line.
Yep. And
are they going to try to steal Justin Hickman too?
Maybe he's still out there, right? So, I mean, they got Balky and Hall there, and now Wad and Foley on the outside. So that's a lot of talent right there, and three Canadians on that defensive line for the Argos.
Yeah, and we talked about on the last episode about both of us being very high on what the Argos have done. This is another good move by them, and again, I see them being a real threat in East this year.
Yeah, you got to wonder if the new stadium makes the Argos a more attractive destination. Instead of playing at the Sky Dome where it's so huge and the crowds are small, maybe the new stadium, the smaller stadium with the potential for, you know, loud crowds like there are in Hamilton is a big pull.
Well, all this activity by the Argos also kind of torpedoes Jim Barker's talk of hating free agency. We talked about this before and kind of wondered if maybe he was hampered more by Braley's ownership than he was by any philosophical disagreements with how free agency goes. And Josh Bork, I'm trying to think of who else, Hall, Balky, who else have they brought in? They brought in a few more guys, and I just can't think of them off the top of my head. But they have made some, like Keon Raymond, they've made some signings and spent some money. Maybe this is just proof that Jim Barker was full of it and was really just covering for his bosses.
Yeah, that could be. Who knows?
So that's pretty much it for Ticat news this week, but there is some interesting CFL news. Did you happen to read that article that was written by an anonymous player on Three Down Nation?
Yeah, I did. I read through it.
Kind of eye-opening, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. A lot of the stuff I knew already, but it's good to get a perspective from a player, even if we don't know who it is.
What were some of your main takeaways from the article?
Well, he talked about TV contract covering 85% of the salaries already before, you know, any tickets are sold or any merchandise is sold. The CFL has had some tough times in the past. They're not completely out of the woods yet. So I can see the perspective from the players. You know, I want them to get more money too. I want them to get as much money as they can because football careers are very short. But I also see it from the owner's perspective where they just want this league to be, you know, they want to make money, obviously. Owners want to make money and they want to keep building on the momentum that has built over the last 10 or so years. So I can see it from both perspectives.
The part that kind of hit me that I'm interested in was this talk of revenue sharing.
Mm.
And they do it in the NFL, and that's one of the main reasons why the NFL has been as successful as it has been. They've kind of eliminated the idea that teams lose money, make money. It's like they're all making a ton of money. And obviously the numbers won't be as big up here, but I kind of wonder if that's something that maybe gets pushed to the forefront now and it's something that people don't really talk about. And I'm sure people in Saskatchewan will cry foul about how they make all this money and we shouldn't share it with anyone else. But isn't the health of the league as a whole more important than the health of any one individual team?
Absolutely. You got to look at the big picture. I mean, the big money teams will put up a stink, but, you know, we got to look at revenue sharing eventually, you know, down the road, maybe the next CBA, they'll look at it. I'm just kind of concerned that once the CBA ends, there's actually going to be a strike from players if the salary cap doesn't go up a significant amount.
Yeah, that's possible. I believe in the article there was talk of why that sort of doesn't happen and you know, the guys who do make all the money are happy with their position and the guys that are making very little don't really have, like, can't really fight for it. And because they're guys that, well, you want to fight and strike, well, we'll just find someone else. There's guys out there. They're kind of expendable. I like I said, I know there's going to be fans out there, especially in Saskatchewan, who are going to just not be anywhere close to four revenue sharing. But what good is making all that money if at the end of the day you see teams fold? And luckily we haven't had that happen in quite some time, but you see teams fold and oh, well, now you have 100% of zero because there is no league. It makes just too much sense to me for at some point that we decide to just pool all these incomes in together and divvy them out accordingly.
Yeah, it's tough too because, you know, the private owners aren't releasing what they make. You know, the Bob Youngs, the Bob Wettenhalls of the world, the, you know, Larry Tannenbaum now in Toronto. Yeah, we know what Edmonton makes because they're publicly owned, and Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. But those other private owners aren't releasing those numbers. So it's hard to grasp how much a team is making and how much, and the players don't release their salaries, so you can't compare those. So it's a tough situation, and I think eventually they're going to have to open up the books and say, okay, this is how much we're making, and this is how much we can afford. But till we get to that point, I don't think it's gonna happen.
Maybe I'm just naive, but I don't really know how it works in the NFL. But you don't see, you know, statements from teams on how much they made. I think it's just the league sort of pools the revenues, that because if you look at it, there's no local team. It's not like the NBA or the NHL where there's local contracts. Like you see each individual team in the NBA will sign a local television deal, and that's why there's no revenue sharing there, because, you know, the Lakers will make more on their TV deal than, say, the Milwaukee Bucks will. But in the CFL, all the games are broadcast nationally. They all get a cut of the same pie. So there's no advantage to, you know, Saskatchewan or Winnipeg or Hamilton or Toronto or any of the teams. There's no like, oh, well, you're in Toronto, so your television contract, you get more. It's all split, divided equally. I feel like we could be able to do the same with the other, you know, football-related revenue.
Yeah, for sure. And TSN's and the CFL signed an extension to their TV contract, and I never heard any numbers on if it went up, if it stayed the same. So that's a big question mark too, with how much revenue they're making from TV.
Yeah, and of course, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about it. We're playing with other people's money. If it was my money, I might be a little more defensive about taking it out of my pocket. But I'm just trying to look at the overall health of the league, and I think revenue sharing, at some point down the line, maybe not right now, but at some point, probably needs to be addressed.
Absolutely, and I'd love to see, you know, the minimum pay for a CFL player to be around, you know, $100,000. I think that's a good wage. You know, it's not NFL money or NBA or MLB or whatnot. But I think if we could get to a minimum of $100,000, that would be great for the league and great for it's the perception of the league.
Last time we sat down, we were asked what players we were surprised hadn't signed yet, and we listed a dozen or so guys, and three of them didn't sign because they have now accepted deals in the National Football League. Cleon Lang, formerly of the Toronto Argonauts, has signed with the Miami Dolphins. Aaron Grimes, formerly of the Edmonton Eskimos, has signed with the Philadelphia Eagles. And Tristan Okapalugo, whose name I just figured out how to say properly and now might not ever have to say it again, went from the Toronto Argonauts to the Arizona Cardinals. I'm not really all that shocked about any of these signings. These are three great players who I think do have a legitimate shot of making it in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not shocked really either. Maybe the most surprising would be Cleon Lang. I didn't really see that coming. I thought that he would sign with another CFL team, but good on him for getting a contract in the NFL. You know, Aaron Grimes, we've been hearing the rumblings for a long time. He signed with the Eagles, so good on them for getting a contract down south. Who knows if they'll stick? They might be back. You know, a lot of players come back. I think there's been a record number of players signed with the NFL this year. I think around 15 so far. So it kind of hurts the league to see such great players leave. But it's also a good marketing tool for the league to say, hey, we have some great players here. It's good for other players to see that, to come to the CFL and say, hey, this is a good opportunity. If we play with a CFL team, maybe we'll get a look down south. So it goes both ways. And I'm happy for them, and I hope they do well.
Well, it opens up opportunities for other guys.
Yeah.
Okapalugo and Grimes were not household names when they first came to the CFL. And I remember when Cleon Lang was drafted and Argo fans were like, who? And really did not like the move at the time. And he turned into, I think I said it before, probably the second best Canadian interior defensive lineman after Ted Laurent. So no, these guys leaving doesn't shock me any. Which one do you think has the best chance of sticking?
Well, that's a tough one. I'm going to say Grimes. I think he's just such a great cover guy, maybe. He has great speed. I'm not sure if he's a little undersized for the NFL or not, but I'm going to lay my money on Grimes sticking with the Eagles.
Yeah, that would be my pick too, because he could probably play special teams as well, where I don't think you're going to see Lang on special teams. He's too big. And Okapelugo seems to be one of those hybrid NFL side, like he's too small to be a defensive lineman, but too big to be an outside linebacker. But maybe he fills like a Cam Wake role with Arizona. I just don't see him as a special teams contributor. I think those guys, and this is why I think Eric Harris has a great chance of sticking in the NFL, despite his numbers in the CFL not being eye-popping or him even being considered like an all-star player or anything like that. It's that he can contribute in multiple areas, and special teams is probably where he's going to make his hay down in New Orleans. I think the same with Grimes. He's talented enough to probably play on defense, but I think when he starts, he's going to be a guy that you see playing special teams.
Yeah, maybe work his way up to a starting role on defense or a backup role and stick in the NFL for a while. You know, if you're a CFL fan, you're going to see a lot of this, you know, star players leaving. But it's always interesting to see the next guy step up. And sometimes the next guy that steps up does a better job than the guy that left. And sometimes the guy that left comes back and, you know, we have a star player coming back from the NFL. So it's just a part of being a CFL fan that players are going to leave, but other guys are going to step up.
Yeah, I wish all three of them the best of luck in their NFL aspirations, as I wish all CFL players who try to go and make it down south luck, because this is a short game and you don't get to play for a very long time. And if you can make that NFL money, good on you. So one last piece of news, and it is, seems like every now and then this idea of the CFL moving into the U.S. is brought up. And a few months ago, it was Rod Peterson talking about a team in, I can't remember where exactly, but he was talking about, it was L.A.?
Yeah.
You're right, it was L.A. Talking about a team going to L.A., and we dismissed that because we thought it was ridiculous. And, well, now L.A.'s got a football team, thanks to St. Louis, who had a football team thanks to L.A. So the Rams have moved back to their original home, which leaves a vacancy in St. Louis. And there's apparently a small vocal minority out there who are calling for the CFL to put a team in St. Louis. We're going to talk about it, but like, let's just put it out there. This is not going to happen.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's an interesting idea. You know, you have the fans that are just pissed off at the NFL right now and want football back. And I think that, say, in a alternate universe, they did put a team in St. Louis, I think that the fan support would be pretty strong at first, but it might fade once time moves on. And you never know, the NFL could put a team back in St. Louis and then the CFL would become irrelevant in that market. So, you know, I don't see the league ever, at least in the near future, expanding to the States anytime soon. So I don't think it's going to happen. It's an interesting idea. And, you know, if the fan support was there, I would accept it. You know, one American team in the CFL, like, I think it'd be great to get 10 teams, but I just don't see it happening.
Well, there's a site that they've opened up kind of promoting this. And on that site, they also mention other American cities that could potentially be markets for CFL expansion, Milwaukee, Orlando, Portland, and Memphis. Mm-hmm. Now, Milwaukee, to me, that's Packers country. And I know Joe, USFL Tecmo, Joe Pritchard on Twitter, is diehard Packers fan and has come to love the CFL, but I think he's an anomaly. He's not the norm. No. And I don't think that Milwaukee would be a great place to put a team. Orlando nearly had a CFL team, if I'm not mistaken. They were going to be the Manatees, and that never got off the ground. And Memphis did have a CFL team. Matt Dunnigan, I think. No, it was Damon Allen was a quarterback for the Memphis Mad Dogs the one year they existed, and that didn't work. It's an interesting idea, but it's, to me, it's flawed. And like I said, it's not going to happen.
League after league trying to compete with the NFL, or not even trying to compete with the NFL, you know, doing football in the spring or whatever in the States, and just league after league has failed and failed and failed. I think it's just the States loves football. They love their NFL and they love their college football. They love their high school football, but I don't think that there's necessarily room for another pro league, because we've just seen it happen time and time again where leagues fold after a short period of time.
Well, and what is this going to do? Are they going to put a team in St. Louis similar to how it happened in Baltimore, where Baltimore really accepted the Stallions? Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, the NFL goes, there is a football market there. Let's move a team there. Is this sort of a fling for St. Louis football fans, where they'll be like, oh, well, let's bring the CFL down to entice the NFL back? And then what happens with the St. Louis team in the CFL when the NFL does return to, you know what I mean?
So it's just I think it's a pipe dream. It's an interesting idea, but yeah, I don't think it has any real legs to it.
No, I can't see it happening. I think if they're going to expand, we're going to see, it's going to be in Canada. There's a number of cities in Canada that could be possible expansion destinations. And even then, I don't see that happening for quite some time, just simply because let's get this team healthy with not, we just talked about how there's, you know, good teams and bad teams and wanting revenue sharing and all that sort of stuff. So let's concentrate on getting the teams that we have in the CFL to get them all in the black and get them all making money and get the players making more money. And then we'll worry about where we should get team number 10, 11, 12, so on and so forth.
Exactly. And it's just so hard to build suitable stadiums in Canada. You know, they're all over the place in the States. And yeah, you could plop a team anywhere in the States right now in a number of stadiums, but it's just not the same in Canada. There's not, you know, 20, 25,000 seat football stadiums that are just sprouting up around the country. So that's one of the obstacles in Canada. And the obstacle in the States is it's just such a gamble expanding to the States. So both countries have hurdles to get over before we can expand.
The Rams left St. Louis because the city of St. Louis wouldn't pay money to build them a new stadium. Why would the city then? Because here's the thing. We were seeing new stadiums pop up in Canada. Tim Hortons Field. BMO's not new, but it's newer, especially than the Sky Dome. Regina's got a new stadium coming. Winnipeg's got a new place. TD Place in Ottawa is new. And the thing is, these luxury boxes, these suites, these premium seating options is the way to go. Are they going to build a 25,000 seat stadium in St. Louis with taxpayers' money that have all these things? Or are they going to try to shoehorn them into an already existing stadium for a college team or something like that that won't have these revenue generating amenities that these modern stadiums in Canada have? So therefore, it's kind of doomed to fail from a financial standpoint.
Are they going to play at the old stadium where the St. Louis Rams played? I mean, that would be kind of like a Sky Dome type thing where, you know, I don't think they're going to draw 55,000, 60,000 or whatever that stadium holds. So, you know, they probably have to build a new stadium with a smaller capacity. And I don't know if they're going to just do that for a CFL team. So, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, the Edward Jones Dome is the stadium you're talking about in St. Louis. It holds 66,000 people.
Yeah.
And
stupid.
If you want to talk about the dome being cavernous, imagine what 17,000 people in a 66,000 seat stadium would sound and look like. Like, it just doesn't seem viable from a financial standpoint, let alone anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is normally where we would answer some listener questions, but we instead have an interview. We have our first guest ever on the show, and we really hit a home run with this one, don't you think?
Oh, totally agree.
So I'd like everyone to welcome Jeff Reinbold, Hamilton Tiger Cats Special Teams Coordinator, to the podcast. Welcome, Jeff.
Man, I didn't know this was like a first here. I'd have dressed better or something. I don't know. what do you do when you're the first guest? I don't know. Man, you guys are starting off at the bottom. It can only get better.
Hey, I'm supposed to be the self-deprecating one here who makes fun of myself. Just ask Mike.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's start off starting off at the beginning, you've been coaching since 1981, and not to make you feel old, but that was the year before I was even born.
Hey, come on now.
Sorry about that. But I just kind of want to know, like, how did you get into coaching? How did you get into this crazy world of football?
Well, I tell you what, to be honest with you, I won't say it was by mistake, but it wasn't certainly by design. I was, I think like a lot of kids, I didn't really have a handle on reality very well when I went to college. And I went just because I really wanted to continue to play, and that was the next step past high school. So I went to the University of Maine and played there, and never really thought about life after football. Never thought, you know, that it would ever end. You know, you get, as a kid, you think it goes on forever. And I was walking past the head coach's office about after week 3 or 4 of my senior year, and I tore my bicep and ruptured my bicep tendon, and I took a week off, and then they let me play with it. And the head coach says, "Jeffrey, get in here." And there's only two people really that call me Jeffrey, and that was my mother and him when they were mad at me. So I'm thinking, "Oh boy, what have I done?" Now you start going through that Rolodex of bad habits in your head, and I thought, "Oh shit!" And anyway, he said, "What are you going to do?" He sat me down and across his desk, Jack McNeil, and he sat me down across the desk and he said, "What are you going to do when this is over?" And I was like, "Huh? You mean it ends? I mean, over, what do you mean over? Like practice is over?" He said, "No, you got, I don't know what it was, 8 games or whatever left." And he said, "You got, that's all you got left to play. And then you're going to have a life after this is over. What are you going to do?" And I said, Coach, I'll be honest with you, I never even thought about it. I really, you know. And he said, well, I think you should coach. And that was really the first time I thought about it. My dad, interestingly enough, my dad was in professional baseball for, I think, 30 years. So I've been around it my whole life, just never really thought of it was going to be my calling. And then, you know, that's really how it happened.
So was there any – so you get into it, and then now it's just been a whirlwind. You've been all over the world. Do you take something from every little stop that you've been on, and do you just kind of sometimes look at the whole picture and be like, I can't believe how many places I've been?
Well, I think really it's been I don't know if you're Saturday Night SNL fan, Saturday Night Live fan, but back in the day when Saturday Night Live was really – you know, the show on TV, there was a character in that skit, in a series of skits named Chico Escuela. And Chico was a guy that played baseball. And he used to have this saying that baseball been very, very good to me. Well, that's the way I look at football. I've had some incredible opportunities to do things that certainly no kid from my background could ever have dreamed that he would have an opportunity to do. So the game has been incredibly good to me, to my family. You know, my life has been enriched in so many ways, particularly because of the players and coaches that I've been around in, you know, whatever 30 years, I guess it's been, of doing it. You know, you get around a special group of guys. Football is, to me, the greatest team sport there is. And, you know, it requires something that's a little different than any other sport requires, and a part of, you know, it's the last man's team game, you know, and so you see not only the best of, you know, people in when they're put in this environment, but you see the worst of people when they're put in this environment. And then, you know, you see what can be accomplished when people don't care about who gets the credit and what, you know, what teamwork means, and all of those things that, you know, seem like trite and cliche and all of that really are valid in this game. And then on top of it, you know, I've had a chance to coach at the University of Hawaii. I've, you know, coached on, I think, all the continents in the world except for, let me make sure that's not, I know not, and I've never been on Antarctica to coach, but I think I've coached on every other continent in the world. So that's a pretty amazing thing when you consider it. And what I've learned is, no matter where you are in the globe, the game is the same game, and the people that fall in love with it are the same guys, and, you know, the coaches that coach it are the same kind of people, and it's just been a wonderful experience.
Mike, you got a question about Las Vegas for him?
Yes. Now, I'm sure one of the more interesting times for you as a coach was your time with the expansion team, the Las Vegas Posse. Now, I read a book called End Zones and Border Wars, which you did some interviews for, and you had some interesting stories. I just wondered if you wanted to talk a little about your time with the Las Vegas Posse, and if you enjoyed it, if it was a bit of a show, or
it was all of the above. It was surreal at times. You know, I mean, you one time where, just to tell a story, Ron Meyer, who is really one of the greatest guys I know and a true character and perfect for coaching in Vegas, he came into our office and he said, all right, let's go. We're going to go. The owner wants us to go and meet some guys at I think it was the Tropicana, I think, or the MGM. I can't even remember which casino it was. And we get in and we ride the elevator all the way up to the penthouse suite. And I'm thinking, well, this is pretty cool. And again, you got to understand, I'm not a Vegas guy. I'm naive about gambling and the whole thing. And we get in there, and we're in the penthouse suite. We're all sitting around as coaches, and all of a sudden, these guys walk in, and you could tell they were different characters. And it was basically the managers are all the sports books in Vegas, because they were going to have CFL football on the books on the house. And they didn't understand enough about the game to be able to, you know, talk about you know, how it all works and project who's going to be favorites and, you know, all of that stuff. So they actually wanted us to kind of clinic them on the game and how the league works and how the, you know, the salary cap works and the ratios and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm up here with Lead Pipe Louie and all the boys. I might be buried. If I get the wrong information, I might be buried under a cactus somewhere out here in a couple months. That was the first one. And then the other one was, again, just kind of crazy story, but we're playing Saskatchewan, and we have a field goal formation that we line up in this formation. And if they don't line up correctly, it's an automatic to a fake off of that formation. Well, we used it also in extra points. So we score late in the game to go ahead to win the game. And I'm over on the sideline, too caught up in the score, high-fiving guys and all this stuff. And the field goal or the extra point team goes out to do their thing, and they line up like they were coached. And the holder sees what he thinks is the correct look, and he tries the fake, and we don't get it. And so we don't get the extra point. We don't get the convert. Well, if we had gotten the convert, we would have covered the spread, right? So all of a sudden, Ron Meyer, who understands how all this stuff works, comes down the sidelines to me. He goes, "What in the?" And I won't say what he said, but he goes, "What in the freak are you? What are you doing?" I said, "Coach, I'm sorry. I was just caught over. I was over here high fiving and laughing with the guys." He goes, "You," as he said, "you didn't cover." And I said, "What?" I said, "What do you mean cover?" And I said, because I don't even know what cover means at this time, right? So he says, he's standing there on the sidelines next to me. He goes, "When they come after you after the game, I'm not going to tell them. I'm going to point right to you." And I appreciated his honesty. So I go into the locker room after the game, and all of a sudden the press comes in to do the post game, and they ask Meyer about going for two on the extra point and not covering the spread, and he points directly at me and he says, "It's him." what ended up happening was that, you know, obviously there was a big deal and I had to answer questions with the commissioner, and, you know, and it got in the paper in Phoenix, and my grandmother was about 85 years old at the time, and she reads my name in the paper in Phoenix about, you know, alleged point shaving. And so she gets crazy and calls my dad, and you know, and then my dad calls me and goes, "What in the hell are you doing down there?" And I had to explain the whole story. But it was, yes, that was kind of some of the stuff that went on when we were in Vegas.
That has got to be probably, I'm going to guess, the first and only time a coach has yelled at you about the spread on the sideline.
That is the only time, and it was really interesting. And this is, again, how you don't realize that that's so much a part of that existence there and a part of the way of life there. We're coming off the sideline. I mean, we're coming off the field, and there's guys in the stands screaming at Meyer because he didn't cover. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is a different deal here now, because you don't get that in the CFL, because I don't think the games are even on the line up here. But you know, it was all that kind of experience. And, you know, at that point in my life, I was, you know, I rode around on a Harley, and, you know, it was, I'm going to tell you something. It was fun. It was fun.
Now, do you ever see, like, there's talk now about a CFL team in St. Louis since they lost their NFL team. I don't think it's a good idea to expand to the States again, but do you ever see that happening again?
No, I really don't. I think the game is so rooted in our country and so much a part of Canada. I certainly think that expansion is something that needs to continue to happen in the league. I think that when you look at possible expansion sites, certainly you've got to think about Quebec City. I mean, we're getting ready for the draft, and we just watched some Laval film, and you can see the passion of the fans there. Their Montreal game, they got people, they're not even seats for them, and I don't know how big that stadium is, but, you know, obviously there's an appetite for football in Quebec City, and it would make it'd be a natural rivalry between them and Ottawa and Montreal, and, you know, it'd give us another Eastern team.
And I think for them, from a, you know, excuse me, but from a national standpoint, certainly you've got to consider the Maritimes. And I know we've played games out there, had great fan support in the games we played out there. It's the issue, as I understand it, with the Maritimes is it's about stadium and yeah. where are we going to play. But I just think that there's an appetite for it in the country. I think one of the things that may have to happen is they may have to adjust the ratio a little bit, because I don't know, frankly, right now, if there's enough Canadian talent to have 21 players on two more teams, because you're talking about now 42 more Canadian players that have to be in on rosters, and I just don't know if there's that much depth out there.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get to a 10-team league, that's for sure.
Just oh, there's no question. I think it'd be awesome for the league. I think it would, you know, keep the interest higher in the game. You know, I think when you, and it's better now than it ever has been, but, you know, when you're playing a team four times a season, that, you know, is a little, in football, it just gets to be a little bit too much. You know, you talk about two with a maximum of three is fine, but when you start playing a team four times in a season, it's too much familiarity.
Yeah, yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, Hamilton and Winnipeg played four games in the first 7 weeks, and they even played a preseason game against each other, so really five games in the first 9 weeks of the season. It did feel a little bit like overkill,
yeah,
and a bit too much.
Yeah, I don't think that's good for the game, and I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's good for attendance and the fans and everybody. But you know, you look around and you know, I've been through the I guess spectrum when you talk about, you know, when I first came up here in the late 80s as a guest coach in BC, the league had just lost its big liquor sponsors. I think Shenley had the Shenley Awards, and there was a point in the, you know, in the early 80s where the league was going great, and then started to struggle again in the late 80s, and then boy, in the 90s we had just some really, really hard times. And that's why I have a appreciation for how good it is right now. When you come to Tim Horton Field and every game last year sold out, and you know, you go around the league and you see the kind of crowds that people are generating today, and it really makes you feel good. Montreal, and you know, obviously the deal in Ottawa is a huge success, and you know, Regina's like, it's, you know, it's amazing. When I first came in this league, Regina was in trouble financially. Mm-hmm. And now the Riders are, you know, a license to print money, and Edmonton's healthier than they've been in a while. And, you know, BC went through a tough stage, but came back. And so I think the league's healthier now than it's ever been. The stadiums are better. The facilities for the players are better. The talent level in the league is better than it's ever been. The coaching's better than it's ever been. So I see nothing but positives on the future, on the horizon for the league.
Yeah, it's just you see all the leagues that come and go in the States, and it's really, you know, a testament to the CFL that they held on. You know, they're on the brink so many times, and we're still around and kicking and stronger than ever. So it's a really good time to be a CFL fan, in my opinion.
It is, because, like I say, I can remember, you know, being at BC where they would give us our paychecks during the season a little early. Our girl in the office would always make sure that the coaches got their paychecks first, so that we could run right to the bank and cash them before, you know, there wasn't any money left in there. And you know, being in your office and all of a sudden a guy in a trench coat walks in and says, "You got 2 hours to clean your stuff out, leave everything that's not yours, because we're taking over because they can't pay their bills." You know, so been down that road, seen that stuff. Been in Vegas where we didn't have enough money at the end to buy paper, and had to, you know, print scouting reports 1 week and then turn them over and print on the other side the scouting report the next week on the paper, because that's all we had. So yeah, you know, I've seen both ends of the spectrum now.
Now, getting to some current times, I just want to ask you a question about Speedy B, Brandon Banks.
Yep.
You've seen a lot of great returners over the years. Where does Speedy B rank among them?
Wow, you know, that's a great question, because I've really been blessed in this league to have some, you know, tremendous players. I've had an opportunity to coach You know, Henry Williams, who, you know, is maybe one of the best that's ever done at any level, anywhere, and pinball and rocket competed against those guys. And, you know, we had a kid in Winnipeg, Eric Blunt, who set the record for combined yardage in a season, and Chad Owens, and, you know, Pee Wee Smith. And, I mean, there's been a bunch of them. And I think he belongs up there in the conversation with any of those guys. And he has the same ability that, even though he's a little bit different than Henry, Henry was a, you know, speed guy like Brandon is, but Henry was very strong and you know, even though he's short, he was extremely packed together. Brandon is really thin. I mean, he's only 147 pounds. So it's amazing to me that he has the durability that he has at that size. But he can, if you don't put people around him, he can, you know, turn a simple play into a touchdown. And when you have that, just like what the same thing that we had in Edmonton when we had Gizmo, was that the players around him understand what he can do on any given play. And so they even if it's subconsciously, they compete a little bit harder on those downs, knowing that all he needs is just a little bit of a crack and he can take one, you know, all the way. And he becomes truly, truly a weapon. It's like Daron Carter got caught on the sideline when we were playing Montreal a couple of years ago. The television camera caught him saying to one of the other guys on the field, "What the hell are we still kicking the ball to him for?" I mean, that's the kind of player Speedy B is.
Well, yeah, that that game in the East Final in 2014, I'm at a loss for words to explain how just he did what he did. It was incredible. One of the greatest single player performances, special teams wise, I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think, you know, and when you consider he had two and had one called back, you know, that's three in a game. I mean, I've seen a lot of football, and I can't remember seeing three in a game. And, you know, we're really fortunate here. We've got a tremendous group of kids. When we came in here 3 years ago, we drafted a core group of players, and Freddie Plessis and Nadone and King and Courtney Steven and Eric Harris, all those guys, Delvin Bro, they all came in together, and they've really kind of grown through that time and turned into probably as good a special teams unit as there's ever been in this league when you look at what they've done over the last couple of years. I mean, last year we returned, I believe it's six kicks for touchdown, and we blocked six punts, and, you know, we scored twice on onside punts. I mean, they've done stuff that just phenomenal stuff. And it really has to do with the players. They are extremely committed, and they play well together, and, you know, they take coaching, and they care. And that's the biggest thing. They care.
So I want to talk about another player, a guy that the Ticats just signed that brought a lot of headlines, and that is Chad Owens.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's been a bit of a mixed emotions with Chad Owens coming over to Hamilton from Toronto. But what were your thoughts when you first heard that Owens was signing with the Ticats? Were you licking your chops thinking about what you could do with him and Brandon Banks back there?
Well, I'm going to tell you something, bro. There was no mixed emotions in the coach's office. There was just pure elation, because here's the thing. We have tried, actually. We've had conversations with Toronto for a couple of years to try and get him. And my time with Chad goes all the way back to his time at Hawaii. And so I've seen what he's done. I've, you know, been witness to how many ankles he's broke over his career. And he is a phenomenal player. Now, he's at the end of his career. There's no question about that. But he is so competitive, and he takes such great care of his body. Going to be a tremendous addition to us. And then when you factor in the other part of it, the part that comes when you get Chad, which is a tremendous leader, a guy who is incredibly dedicated to the sport and his teammates, who shows the young players what it means to be a pro, how to practice, how to come to work every day, how to take care of your body, how to work in the off season. Those are all things that Chad brings to your football team. So for us to have an opportunity to bring him into our group, I think is a phenomenal thing, and will only, you know, it'll pay dividends long after Chad leaves here. However many years he plays, if he plays 1, 3 or whatever, his mark will be left on this organization because of the kind of person that he is.
Well, anyone out there still on the fence about Chad Owens as a tight end, I think you've probably swayed them over.
Well, I'm going to tell you something now. He'll be fun, and he will – practices will get more intense. The routes will be run crisper. The receivers will work harder. The quarterbacks, you know – I mean, he elevates everybody around him on the football team. And I do anticipate having an opportunity to get both he and Speedy on the field at times. But again, you think about it, you're the punter. Who are you punting to? You know, one of the things that you try to do when you've got a great returner to lessen his impact or mitigate him is you want to kick the ball away from him. Well, our rules help us in that regard, but still that's a wide field. And, you know, you watch, like, for example, Calgary, they'll constantly trying to kick the ball into the corners or away from you to the big field. You put two of them back there, and you kick it to the big field with Chad Owens or Speedy, it's got a chance to come right back in your lap.
Yeah. Now I was gonna ask if you guys are planning on using Chad Owens in the return game. So you just answered my question. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I will tell you. So we know we have to be judicious with both of them because neither of them is very big. And in Chad's case, certainly he's obviously got some wear on his tires. But to have the opportunity to have them both is really, really a blessing. And then, you know, you got to factor in some other guys. We've got, you know, Damon Washington come over here from Winnipeg has return ability. Kaloa Plaris, who played for us in the Eastern Final last year, was drafted, I think, in the fifth round by Carolina and played in Carolina for 3 years. He has a 100-yard kickoff return in the NFL to his credit. So we've got some other guys too. So our personnel people have done a phenomenal job of finding us talent.
So I want to pick your brain a little bit, not necessarily on specific strategy or anything, because that should be kept secret. We don't want to give the opposition any sort of insights into how you guys do it. But I'm kind of curious, one of your hallmarks since you've been with the Ticats has been doing things differently on special teams and the onside punts, the fake field goals, all that sorts of stuff. What is the thought process going into that? And during the game, when the decision-making and now's the time to try the onside punt or now's the time to try the fake field goal, what kind of goes on the sidelines and who makes the ultimate decision? Is it Kent?
Well, really what happens is all of that stuff is done before we ever step on the field. Because Matt Tolliver, who works with me and whose father actually played for the Ticats. Matty played at Waterloo University for Deke and then has joined our staff. You spend hours and hours and hours looking at the tape and trying to find, you know, as Frank Gans, who probably was the best special teams coach that ever lived, used to say to me, Jeff, you're always looking for slight edges, small wins. And when you find those, then you find a way to attack them. And, you know, it's really almost a gut thing, really. What it comes down to is you build it, and then you say, okay, here are our parameters in the game. This is when we would do it. And, you know, then the players are alerted to it. And what happens is players actually, after a while, they are so tuned in and understand, to, you know, what you're trying to get done to the point where they'll come to you and say, hey, I think it's up. And, you know, when whether it's, you know, run a couple, you know, fake punts where we throw the ball against, you know, and they've been successful for us last couple of years, or fake field goal, or, you know, block punt, or any of those scheme plays, the players are really tuned in. And whether it was Neil King or Nadone or Freddie or whoever, they come to you and they say, hey, coach, it's up. And that's the fun part, because then they're taking ownership, because it's not my team or Matt's team or it's the player's team.
Now, that onside punt play, I believe, has worked every time that you guys have run it. So do you see it ever not working, or is it just going to keep going and going and going and keep?
Well, it's worked every time, and people look at me like, hey, dummy, why don't you call it more? But it's one of those plays that has to be done at a specific time, and we've been really fortunate because – both of the times when it was, whether Hugh O'Neill punting it or Medlock punting it, the punter did a great job of getting the ball down there. And, you know, for example, if you look at the Toronto one, and this is where film study and just, you know, the hours that you spend before the game come to fruition. We knew that if Chad wasn't back there, that they were going to have a rookie back there who's never done it never, I mean, returning in the CFL is a completely different deal. And they had a rookie special teams coach on the sidelines who probably had never seen it. So it was, in our minds, the perfect time to do it. And, you know, that was the where we saw the, as you remember, Jefferson let the ball hit the ground and let it roll because he thought he had, you know, he was protected by yards. And, you know, Stewart went inside and picked up the ball and scored a touchdown. And then the other one that was in Ottawa was really a situational call that we made based upon the weather that night. And we knew that the ball would hang in the wind, and Medlock hit the ball perfectly, and it, you know, bounced up and you know, Rico Murray scooped it up and took it in. And that was a huge point for us, got us back in the game. So, you know, those things are, you know, nothing's 100%, but what we try and do with any of those exotic plays, whether it's a punt block call or a fake field goal or whatever, is put together what we consider the proper parameters in the game to run it, where the ball is, what the situation is, what the wind is, all of those factors. And then when that moment arises, you got to be ready to go out and do it.
I love the Rico Murray one. I was in Ottawa for that game. I was about five rows behind the Ticats bench, and that ball bounced like right in front of my eyes. And I saw it one hop, Rico scoops it up, and I'm like, he's going to score. And there was a woman sitting next to me, and Ottawa has some newer fans, not really familiar with our game that much because they just got back in the league. And she looks at me. I'm going crazy. I'm like, I'm sitting where all the Ticat fans are sitting. We're all going nuts. And she kind of taps me on the shoulder and goes, well, what was that about? I thought you had to give 5 yards. And I was like, oh, no, if there's guys on side, you're allowed to scoop it up. She's like, well, why would you ever do that? I was like, well, because it works. They just scored a touchdown. And I had a good laugh. But, yeah, so some of those things, man, just crazy.
Yeah, that play actually made ESPN in the States top 20 plays. And, you know, I had people from all around the world call me and say, what in the heck are you guys in that league there? But it's just one of the great nuances of our game, and one of the reasons why, you know, if you really, to be honest with you, in the National Football League now, with the way that their rules are structured, the kicking game is becoming less and less of a factor. You know, they've got punters now that can hit the ball to the roof of the building, and, you know, more balls are fair caught than are returned. So in a game where there maybe is 10 punts, you might get 2 punt returns in a game. And everybody's kicking the ball out of the end zone now because they moved the lineup, so that the kicking game is not as important in the NFL, or not as, it doesn't impact the game in the way that it does in the CFL. The CFL, if you're going to be a good football team, the first thing you have to have is a quarterback. The second thing you have to have is great Canadian content. And in my opinion, the third thing you got to have is you got to have great special teams, understand what we call complementary football and situational football, how you get the ball to the offense in the best possible situation and how you make their offense go the longest with the ball. So, for example, last year we block a punt in the Saskatchewan game that our offense gets the ball at the 3-yard line. Well, hell, I mean, every offense in football is pretty good from the 3. You know, but when you've got to go from the other 3 and drive it in our league 107 yards, that's tough. So, you know, that's what we call complementary football and understanding situations. And, you know, the wind in Tim Horton Field is such a huge factor in the game. And to me, it's our greatest, next to our crowd, it's our greatest home field advantage because we know how to play in it. And teams come in here and don't. And, you know, it gives us a huge, huge, you know, opportunity to win the football game.
Mike, you got anything else you want to ask Coach?
I just wanted to touch on, you know, the loss of Justin Medlock. He was such a great field goal kicker for the Ticats over the years. How big of a loss is that, and how hard will it be to replace him?
Well, I tell you what, it's funny because we're going through the process right now, looking at the draft and looking at free agency. And, you know, again, when you talk about free agency, there's that initial feeding frenzy in the free agent period, but then there's also that continued push that to sign what we call street free agents, guys that are not playing right now, not under contract right now. And Justin Medlock was one of those guys a couple years ago, you know. And you have to continually find players, because the reality of the game today, both in our league and in the National Football League, is that with the salary cap and with the salaries that the top players and particularly the top Canadians are going to command, you have to backfill with younger, cheaper players. So, for example, to sign a Teddy, which we were determined to do, you can't have other high-priced guys, and you have to make a decision which way you're going to go. You know, it was tough to lose Justin. He's a great field goal kicker. He is the best field goal kicker in the Canadian Football League without a shadow of a doubt. But we have, you know, the tough calls that, you know, the GMs and the head coaches and the personnel guys have to make is where do you cut to keep guys that you have to have? And that's life in the salary cap, and that's life in free agency, and it's not going to change anytime soon because, you know, these one-year contracts that guys are able to sign now with this new collective bargaining agreement is going to make it even tougher to keep teams together from year to year.
I could sit here and listen to you talk football all day, Jeff. This has been an absolute pleasure. I feel like I know more about the game just from this conversation. You bring a passion to this, and I know I speak for Mike and I speak for myself, and I'm sure I speak for all of our listeners. Thank you so very much for doing this.
Yeah, well, man, I tell you guys, I appreciate you talking ball, you know, and again, this is how we grow the game. The bottom line is the game doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the people, and, you know, we need to continue to talk about the game all year long, all the time. I mean, you know, I'm involved in a podcast that I do once a week for the NFL, and you know, it's all about growing the game. The game has been so good to every single one of us, and we got to take good care of it because, you know, it's truly the particularly the Canadian game. It is a unique, special thing, and it's been a tremendous pleasure to be with you guys.
So, where can people find you? Like, you're on Twitter, obviously. Give them your Twitter handle and let them know what they can get into.
Jeff_Reinbolt, and you can hit me on Twitter and follow. We do a couple of things. I have a thing I do every week called a peek inside, and I just let the fans get a peek inside of what goes on here and what our facilities are like and what the day of a pro football player is like. And then also, if you want to follow us at Inside the Huddle, that is our podcast. It is the largest NFL podcast, most listened to NFL podcast outside of the and have been a tremendous success. And we talk CFL and Ticat Nation in that too. So go to Inside the Huddle. You can download it at NFLUK.com or on iTunes.
Awesome. Just awesome. Thank you again for doing this. Maybe later on in the year, we'll get you back on here. We can talk some more because this has been an absolute pleasure.
Let's do it once a week during the season. It'd be fun to talk ball once a week with you.
Oh my God. I'm going to hold you that. You will be. I will love to do that.
You got it, brother.
All right, have a good one, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Aloha.
Man, how great was that?
Just talking to him, you know, hearing his thoughts on his time in the league and his planning processes in football and special team stuff and all that. He's a great mind and a really nice guy, and it was a pleasure to have him on the show. And it was really thrilling for me, and I know for you, to just talk some football with Jeff.
It was like sitting under the learning tree and just listening, because this is a man who has been in the game for 35 years as a coach. Forget as a player. We heard him talk. He played college ball. That means he played high school. He's probably been in the game of football for like 45 years. That's experience and knowledge that you just can't create. It was by far the most favorite thing that I've ever done regarding the show. It's since we started.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, hoping to have him on the show more in the future. And, you know, because I could have talked to him for hours and hours, but we didn't want to keep the guy. So, you know, we could talk football with him forever. So it was just a great experience.
Yeah, I could have sat there and listened to him retell stories. I'm sure we heard a couple of them from his days with Las Vegas. I'm sure he's got more than enough. I'd love to delve into, like, his time in Winnipeg, because that was a huge thing. Yeah, there's plenty more to talk to Jeff about. And as you heard, he said he would love to come on the show once the season starts. I'm going to hold his feet to the fire on that one, and hopefully the listeners out there will as well. And what a great guy, and that was just so much fun.
Yeah, really, really nice guy, and just great listening to him.
So, yeah, like I said before the interview, we will get to some questions that we did receive on the next show. There were some great questions, some that will get us really in-depth. But we felt that you guys would rather listen to Jeff talk football than have us give our opinions again. So we'll get to those questions at another time. But I hope you enjoyed the interview. And, hey, you know, reach out to us. Hit us up on some other people that you would like to hear us talk football with, and we'll see what we could do. This was kind of a Hail Mary shot, and he agreed, and maybe there's ways to get other people on there. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll see. See who we can get on, and it should be interesting to see to talk to some other people that have a lot of experience in football as well.
Yeah, we're just two schmucks who watched the game. I played the game, but I played Canadian high school football, so did I really play the game that much? but yeah, I'm at a loss for words as to really how to describe that. But I hope you all out there enjoy it, and let's see if we can get some more people going forward. So, I guess that's it then for the week. Like, don't forget, always subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you want to have your questions answered, you can hit both of us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle as always?
Mike_Ticats.
I'm Josh Smith_82, and I promise you that the questions we received are being kept, and they will be used on the next show. So don't worry about that. That is going to happen. And again, we got comments in 3 Down Nation, and you can leave your questions and comments there, and we'll get them on the show and all that good stuff. So for Podski Wee Wee this week, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.